Welcome to Tower Talks with Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast. And now for your weekly recap, a timely review of this week's top headlines and takeaways. Here's your host.
Welcome to Inside Towers Week in Review. I'm Leslie Stimson, Inside Towers Washington Bureau Chief. With me is John Salentano, our business editor. This episode is sponsored by Inside Towers Intelligence. It's a quarterly market report that dives deep into the wireless infrastructure ecosystem. Intelligence looks at market trends, capital expenditures, relevant M&A transactions, and more. The 2024 Volume 1 will be available shortly. Intelligence is designed for managers, marketers, and investors. An annual subscription also includes an exclusive briefing and online support. For more information or to subscribe, visit insidetowers.com/intelligence. Well, John, you had a busy week. I gather you're going to start with tower sales.
Yeah. It's interesting, Leslie. We're not slowing down, even though there's lots of talk about the big slowdown. There's still lots going on in this industry, and I think that's positive and encouraging to all of us. But yeah, there was a couple of tower sales we reported on this week, one domestic and one international. Domestically, Shentel, which is Shenandoah Telecommunications out of Edinburgh, Virginia, sold off the last of its towers to Vertical Bridge. And, you know, Shentel is focusing on its fiber business and has gotten out of the wireless business when T-Mobile picked up the wireless portion of Shentel's business. But it had retained a couple hundred towers that it has since agreed to sell to Vertical Bridge. There's something like 219 towers. When you count a few other telecom sites, it's 226. And that deal went for about $310 million. I calculated at about 33 times tower cash flow, which is pretty good deal. Vertical Bridge expands its portfolio, and Shentel gets some money to pay down some debt and invest in his fiber business. The other deal, which was bigger, was internationally. Phoenix Tower International, acquired about 1,900 sites from Cellnex, which is the Barcelona, Spain-based tower company in Europe. Cellnex is actually the biggest tower company in Europe when you count all its properties in 12 countries across Europe, but it has been systematically pruning that portfolio and selling off small pieces of its lineup as it feels it may not want to operate in particular markets. You know, European-wise, it operates something like 139,000 towers when you count the 16,000 build-to-suits that it's scheduled to construct through 2030. So 1,900 is kind of is a small portion, but it helped both Cellnex and it gives Phoenix Tower a bigger footprint in Ireland. Once this deal concludes, Phoenix Tower will operate internationally something like 29,000 towers, is growing its presence in Europe and elsewhere. A couple other articles we touched on. One was Dish, and all its trials and tribulations. Dish reported its year-end 2023 and fourth quarter 2023 earnings. And honestly, it wasn't a pretty sight. The company is losing subscribers. It started in the wireless business as an MVNO of T-Mobile. It acquired the Boost Mobile prepaid business from T-Mobile as part of a deal with the Justice Department and the FCC to for the T-Mobile Sprint merger to go ahead. But, you know, starting with something like 9 million subscribers at the time that deal went down. It reported about 7.5 million at the end of 2023. Not only that, revenues are dropping off, or did drop off during the year. It is attempting to recruit and sign up postpaid subscribers to the 5G network. Its goal is to migrate as many prepaid subscribers over to postpaid on its 5G network, as well as attract 5G signups from competitors. So it's struggling. It claims that it has some runway to refinance its debt. Its next major milestone is to reach 75% of all the partial economic areas in the country by June of 2025. But it needs to build out quite a few more sites to accomplish that. At the end of 2023, it reported a little over 20,000 sites that it had built already. It did spend about $2.5 billion in 2022 and 2023 to reach that point. But once it reached the 70% coverage bogey in mid-June of 2023, things slowed down. So it's in the more of a planning stage right now. It expects its CapEx to be cut in half through 2024 before it starts to ramp up again in 2025 to meet that other goal. So
Do they admit that they're struggling?
they seem to express a fair amount of confidence that they could get through it with debt refinancing. I think the analyst community on Wall Street are taking a much more somber look at it, and there's been some reports talking about pending bankruptcy and the like, but they did not they you know they're still optimistic. I mean, they're a great group of people when it comes to going for it, and they seem to feel that they're still well within their capabilities to meet those goals. So we shall see. So that lots going on, like I said, Leslie, and we're on top of it.
Well, thank you, John. Lots going on regulatory-wise. The FCC opened a formal investigation into last month's nationwide AT&T wireless network outage. The outage left many of their customers without cell phone service for much of the morning and into early afternoon of February 22nd. Outage reports started coming in around 3:30 a.m. Eastern, and it was resolved by 3 Eastern that afternoon. At the time, the carrier attributed the outage to a technical error while carrying out a network expansion. It involved a software update that went awry, according to sources telling ABC News at the time. The commission previously said it was looking into the issue, so are the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and the New York Attorney General's office. But now it has opened a formal investigation, and that is significant. As the next step, it has asked for in-depth information from AT&T concerning the cause, effect, and corporate response to the incident. That's according to an agency spokesman. He said the FCC is carrying out a thorough investigation into a nationwide outage of the AT&T network that affected millions of consumers and disrupted access to life-saving communications. So, in past investigations of wireless network outages, the FCC has asked for information such as the number of customers affected, the root cause, and steps taken to restore service. AT&T didn't immediately respond. It's still unclear why the outage lasted for so long. The carrier has not said how many of its roughly 87 million postpaid wireless customers were affected. According to Down Detector, an estimated 1.7 million people reported they had lost service. March 9th, which is a Saturday, marked 1 year since Congress failed to renew the FCC's auction authority. Hard to believe it's been a year. And that was the first time in 30 years that lapse had happened. Commission Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel highlighted potential next steps. She called the auction authority an indispensable tool for harnessing the promise of new wireless technologies while also spurring economic growth, creating jobs, and strengthening our national security and international leadership. She said, "We are now compelled to ask, what can we do with our current unassigned spectrum in order to keep innovation moving ahead in a global market for wireless that is not slowing down?" She remains hopeful the auction authority will be restored quickly. And she added that the agency stands ready to work with lawmakers to ensure it doesn't find itself in the same place a year from now. The agency has opened a docket to explore how its existing regulatory tools and current statutory authority could provide the public with access to its inventory of unassigned spectrum. Remember, for T-Mobile to get those 2.5 gigahertz licenses, it took a bill in Congress being passed to do that, because at the time Rosenworcel was saying that their hands were tied behind their back because of the lack of auction authority, meaning nothing in the auction department could get done, even though T-Mobile had paid for the spectrum and it was just waiting to have the licenses issued. And let's see, switching to another dangling issue in Congress is rip and replace, getting that $3.08 billion shortfall plugged. Competitor Carriers Association President and CEO Tim Donovan stressed the urgency of fully funding rip and replace to Congress. He said in a letter to House and Senate leadership, as well as the chair of the House and Senate Commerce Committees, that the reimbursement program was meant to fund the removal, disposal, and replacement of telecom network equipment from Huawei and ZTE that U.S. officials had deemed a national security risk. He said the situation is dire. So far, Congress has provided less than 40% of the approved funding needed to fulfill this national security mandate. So he said the lack of money has meant that many program participants, especially in Western states, are forced to decide where to remove covered equipment but not replace it, eliminating service available today, both to their own subscribers as well as millions of Americans that roam onto their networks for connectivity, including 911 and emergency services. And he said, you know, the program can't succeed until Congress funds the shortfall. The letter was also shared with the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party. So he said, you know, while this is going on, the FCC has been granting 6-month extensions. If a telecom can prove through no fault of its own that it can't do the work. So, for example, they're saying lack of money, supply chain issues, and labor issues. They recently had granted 6-month extensions to a slew of companies, including Advantage Cellular Systems, James Valley Cooperative Telephone Company, Northeast Colorado Cellular, Panhandle Telecommunication Systems, Stealth Communications, TransTelco, and United Western Wireless Communications. And that wraps it up for the regulatory part of this.
You know, Leslie, the AT&T said they would credit all their subscribers $5 for the outage.
Yeah.
That was the cost to furnish the service for one day. And you think, $5, you know, I mean, that's a cup of coffee, right? But when you count the number of subscribers affected across their network, nearly 100 million. Now you're talking some pretty serious money they gotta come up with. But it'd be interesting to see what the final resolution of that is. But
I think eventually we'll learn what exactly happened, but it'll take a while because the FCC will eventually do a report, you know, that says AT&T said X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And it'll take months for that to come out.
Yeah. You know, on that rip and replace too, that's really sad that, I mean, all these carriers were forced to make a change, and now they're in a jam because they can't get enough money to do it properly, or they have to shut down service to subscribers. I think if our government's going to take a position like it did, we have to support the people that have to make it happen. So it's it will happen, but it's just a lot of weeping and gnashing of teeth in the
And
middle.
they were assured that they would be compensated.
Oh
But
yeah.
the problem was the Congress expanded the program. Who could take it, get the money, but they didn't expand the amount of money they devoted to it.
Right.
So,
Right.
yeah,
And
big, 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 big
yeah.
problem there.
We had one other story that actually Jim wrote, but the ongoing saga of Crown Castle. I think we've done about three or four stories on it now, but former co-founder Ted Miller has been in back and forth with the current management and the board. It all started when Elliott Management, the investor, plunked down about $2 billion worth of Crown Castle shares and said, "Look, I think we need to make some changes at the board level, and we ought to relook at what we're doing in fiber because it's cost us a lot of money without the return." And subsequently, the then CEO Jay Brown decided to retire because that was a big part of his strategic initiative. But and then subsequent to that, co-founder Ted Miller, who's been out of the company for quite a while, submitted a proposal to the board, say, "Look, here's some steps I think we could take. And by the way, I'd like to nominate some board members, including my son-in-law." And the board said, "No, thanks, but no thanks." And so Mr. Miller sued Crown Castle, saying, "You're not following a protocol here. You're not giving it a chance for investors to voice their concerns." And Crown Castle shot back, said, "Look, we think Mr. Miller's actions are self-serving. They don't advance what the company is trying to do, and so forget about it. We're not going to really consider his proposal." They turned down his what he had submitted as a proposal, and they denied appointment of any of the board members he had proposed. So it's going back and forth. I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. It's a little bit, Crown Castle wants to get on with evolving their strategic initiative. They're out looking for a new CEO, and I think the feeling is that Mr. Miller's actions are kind of getting in the way here. But like I said, this is what, the third or fourth piece we've written on the coverage, and it's going to be a, I think, until it's resolved, that we'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah, they don't want to have rocks thrown at them while they're trying to chart a path forward, I'm sure.
Yeah. So we'll see. It's I mean, this is not unusual in corporate America, but it's a little bit unusual in this, in the tower business. But
Happens all the time in broadcasting.
I bet.
Well, that's a wrap. Thank you for listening to Inside Towers Week in Review. For a complete rundown of all the week's stories, check out our Saturday edition.
Thank you for listening to Tower Talks. To subscribe to our podcast, our daily newsletter, or use our other industry resources, please visit InsideTowers.com. Until next time, you've been listening to Tower Talks from Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast.